You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
This week we're in Ourgate.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're in Betty's.
Again?
Yeah.
Have we even moved?
Some people may have the suspicion that we haven't moved, but we have actually been outside today in Harrogate. but we were here for lunch, and we're now back here for high tea.
Well, yeah, what a wonderful place it is. And we did have a nice lunch here. I mean, informed by our chat last night with Dan, who told us all about the Swiss connection and how it's still family owned, and we noticed when he pointed that out, there are Swiss specialities all over the menu, and I think we both had Swiss lunches, didn't we?
I had the bacon and raclette rosti, which was
sure
really...
I was sure you were going to go for the gammon steak, Lionel.
This has to stop, this.
But I went for the aubergine schnitzel, and that was delicious. And I just had a coffee eclair.
They are going to have to roll us back down the hill at the end of the week if we carry on like this.
But we understand there was some cycle racing today just on the other side of that window there. And that's why we've got Seb Piquet with us, who was watching it all closely, as were we. That was a joke. We were watching it closely as well. But Seb, you were watching closely the junior women's time trial and the junior men's time trial today.
Yes, normally a very entertaining day. I'm obviously joking about that. It's not always very entertaining, the time trials, to be honest, at the World Championships. But today was a very good day. Probably because of the circuit, first of all, a demanding circuit, and also because there was drama both in the women's race and in the men's race. But we'll talk about that later on.
Well, can you tell us exactly what your role is here? Because we know your voice, obviously, from race radio at the Tour de France and other races, but what's your job here?
Like on the Tour de France and Paris-Nice or Paris-Roubaix, I do race radio here. Radio Tour on the Tour de France, race radio on the World Championships. So for all the time trial events, I'm at the finish line and I just give out times, the intermediate times. If something happens because I see on a screen, a puncture, etc., etc., I'll say on race radio. But I basically just give out times, and the days are very long for me, and I can't wait until the road races where I can eventually get into the red car and enjoy the road races as of Thursday.
In terms of the specifics of the job, is it obviously the World Tour pros? You can probably spot the shape of a hip or the back of somebody's leg and know who it might be. Yeah, I mean, you must know the riders so well, particularly at the end of 3 weeks on the Tour de France. You obviously, presumably, you wait until you've got absolute confirmation of a race number on the back before you give some information on race radio. But is the job harder here because you're less familiar with the junior riders, the under 23 riders, and even in the elite race, you've got the riders in unfamiliar kit because they're in their national jerseys?
It's different, and it's not as easy, indeed, for several reasons. First of all, because I don't necessarily recognise the kits and the jerseys. A lot of nations are present. I don't know the names of the riders, especially in the junior ranks. It's also tricky because the juniors and the under 23s make races extremely entertaining and tend to crash a lot. That makes my job even harder because it happens all the time, and I'm pretty sure that if it rains, but it never rains in Yorkshire, but if it rains in Yorkshire, it's going to be pretty hectic as of Thursday.
Seb, you're doing really well integrating into Yorkshire here. You ordered tea, and you were asked if you wanted milk or lemon. You asked for milk and lemon on the side. That was an unusual choice. What do you plan to do with the lemon there, having put the having put the milk in your tea?
I'm under pressure now. I don't know what to do with all this tea and sugar.
Is that just for vitamin C?
No, I'll give it a go. That'll be in my second cup.
Okay. Good, just clearing that up. That was bothering me there. How are you enjoying your Betty's tea? Is it good?
It's delicious.
And remarkable. And the plinky plonky piano in the background is hello. got a wink from the pianist.
A wink from the pianist. That's very nice. He's in a sort of lemon yellow sports jacket and blue shirt and a kind of brightly coloured tie. It's quite a lounge lizard's outfit, that, isn't it?
Well, I like it. Nice atmosphere.
Lovely. It is.
What else have you done today, Lionel?
Well,
a difficult question, I know.
No, it's not really. The honest answer is that I spent the morning in the hotel writing some diary entries for our forthcoming book, The Grand Tour Diaries, which I'm horrendously behind on for a number of reasons. So it was good to have the opportunity to do that this morning before popping up to see some of the racing this afternoon, and also went into the fan zone for the first time and was really impressed with what they've done there. It's like the market area of a music festival, but for cycling. You know, lots of stalls and tents, and obviously lots of the bike brands are here showing off their stuff, but lots of things for people to do when either between the races or particularly when the road races are on, when they're waiting for the riders to come round. If there aren't enough bars, cafes and restaurants to keep people entertained, there's enough in the fan zone for them as well.
I bumped into a British cycling official who said that they were a bit disappointed by the crowds so far, but I don't think the crowds begin to arrive for a world championship until much later in the week. I mean, with the best will in the world, the men's and women's junior time trials are not great spectacles. I mean, their racing was quite interesting to say, we'll talk about that, but for somebody who's not into cycling, or even for somebody who's into cycling, it doesn't offer an awful lot. And the UCI have a bit of a problem in my view, because it is their showpiece week of world road championships, and the time I'm sorry, but some people love watching time trials. I don't think they're a great spectacle, and I certainly don't think they're a great spectacle for people who are not into cycling.
Well, remember a few years ago, maybe a decade ago, there was a period of maybe 6 to 8 years where the junior races weren't part of this week's programme, and they've reincorporated the junior racing, and I think that's actually quite important for the development of the riders. I think, oddly, the results from events like today's will gain greater significance in potentially in 4, 5, 6 years. I mean, when you look back, particularly at the men's time trial winners in the junior ranks over the last 20 years or so, they're a pretty good indicator of some coming stars. You know, Fabian Cancellara won a couple of times, Marcel Kittel won the time trial a couple of times, Taylor Finney, Mikhail Kwiatkowski, Luke Durbridge, Bob Jungels, all won in consecutive years. So, in recent years, Brandon McNulty, Tom Pidcock and Remco Evenepoel last year, Kamna, of course, yeah. You could look at the results in a few years' time and say that, well, this was their first big result on the world stage. Not a guarantee of future stardom, but it could well be that we look back and say, oh, that was the guy who won in Harrogate, who is now a World Tour pro and winning time trials or races on the biggest stage.
Well, another interesting statistic that I saw on Twitter today, Cafe Roubaix, number of riders to win the under-23 and elite individual time trial world title, 0. Number of riders to win the under-23 and elite road race world title, 0. So that's quite an interesting statistic. Nobody who's won the under-23 time trial or road title has gone on to win the senior.
But
version.
A lot have won junior and then under-23.
Yeah, which is interesting, yeah.
Kamna, for example.
Well, and
Mohorič, who
Mohorič most recently.
Yeah,
no.
Mohorič won the junior and the under-23 world title.
2012 and 2013.
The world champion on Sunday.
That's not a bad shout. He might be an outsider for that, yeah.
Especially if it's rainy on the descents, he has that technique.
True.
That, others might not have.
And that is, you know, we're getting quite a good look at, if nothing else, we're getting a good look at the circuit, aren't we? And it's very challenging. And even here on the finishing straight, the climb up to the finish is really hard. And when you see people on their time trial bikes really labouring up here, you realise that's going to be quite a crucial point of the race.
They've done something really good with this circuit, because if you look back at the Tour de France in 2014, the Tour de Yorkshire, I believe, 2 or 3 years ago, there was a long, long, long straight, and it was finishing at the same place. And they decided that it was important to cut that long straight. And so eventually they decided to go left, and back on the straight where it's the hardest. And that will make a major difference on Sunday and for the road races.
the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Ratha in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
Thanks very much to Rafa, our headline sponsor. A little reminder, if anybody's in Harrogate on Tuesday evening, I'm doing an event at the Rafa pop-up there. Not sure who with you. I'm hoping Seb might join me for a bit, and maybe Rob Hatch as well. What do you think, Seb? Can you be tempted?
I have a rendezvous on Tuesday, but I will come for sure.
Oh, brilliant. Excellent. Well, there you are. Seb Piquet will be there.
Rendezvous.
Excellent. Excellent. Seb and rendezvous will be there. And
So if you don't want to see Richard, but you do want to meet Seb, then
so his first name's Ron, yeah? Rendezvous. And yeah, we'll be there, I think, about 7 o'clock, I think. Maybe earlier, 6.30. 6.30 to be safe at the Rafa pop-up in Harrogate. So the time trials today. Well, interesting stories. I mean, both winners had misfortunes, although the women's junior time trial winner, Aigel Gariva of Russia, second at the European Championships recently. They swapped places, didn't they, the first and second here, because they were the other way around at the European Championships. The Dutch girl who was second, whose name I've currently forgotten, but I can look that up. Lionel.
Shirin van Onrooy.
Well done.
I hope my low country's pronunciation is all right there.
I mean, she went off course before the climb up to the finish. She went straight on at the deviation, the derivation, where the vehicles go.
Very easily done, actually.
Easily done, but not if you've wrecked the course.
Mm. It's interesting. Well, just two things. You were talking about the winners of the day. The favourites today, Backstedt and Piccolo, did not win. So that's rather interesting. And talking about Aigel Gariva, I had a chat with her for live television. My Russian is absolutely perfect, so I understood everything I had to say. But she was explaining via her charming interpreter that it was not at all the fault of the course or the organisation. There was someone there showing her to go right. And she was explaining that it often happens that she just switches off. She has a problem inside her brain and she switches off. And that's why she went straight. And to win after going on the deviation is absolutely outstanding.
Well, it must have given her a real shot of adrenaline, though, the fright, the scare, and just in time to power up this hill.
Yeah, well, the winning margin was only 4 seconds, so, I mean, that could have been catastrophe for her. But you recovered pretty quickly. I was really impressed with how tight she got turned round in that space, because there wasn't an awful lot of space to get back onto the right course. But Seb, you mentioned Elena Backstead, the pre-race favourite. I mean, it's very hard, isn't it, when I know that, you know, there is obviously a junior scene where riders race against one another through the year, but it's not as easy to say, oh, this rider is the favourite. Maybe home advantage was one aspect of that, of course. She's a bronze medal. I think they were reasonably happy with that, but obviously would have preferred to be a couple of steps higher.
Home advantage, I don't think, was an advantage for Eleanor today, coping with the pressure, first of all, and that course was not suited for her skills.
It was very short. I mean, as an event, you know, in the UK, we have a very lively time trial scene, and a 10-mile time trial is the shortest distance you would cover. The women today rode 14 kilometres, which is less than 10 miles. I mean, really no distance at all.
Well, this was one of my questions about today, really. Why? There is absolutely no justification for having the junior men's and junior women's time trials as different lengths. Why not have them both the same length? I mean, especially when the women's racing, the trend is at the elite level that races are getting longer, they are getting tougher. I just don't see really how you can say that it's right that the women only race half the distance of the men. Seb, have you got a view on that?
Well, it would have meant that you would have had to woken up this morning at 7. That's one of the reasons. I don't think you should have the same distances for elite women and elite men. That's completely pointless. It would be completely pointless to have a Grand Slam tennis tournament with 5 sets for women and 5 sets for men. On the other hand, I do agree that on such short distances, like 13 kilometers for the men and 26, I believe, for the men. Why not? Why not have the same distances for the juniors?
It's interesting you say that, because I spoke to William Fotheringham, who's just written a book about Beryl Burton, the great, well, she lived in Harrogate, Yorkshire cyclist, who was many times world champion, British champion. And one of her great achievements was over the 12-hour event, where she actually held the overall record. And I mean, because you can make the opposite argument that actually when it comes to endurance and ultra endurance, women can beat men. You know, we saw it recently, a transcontinental race, we've seen it in other events. So there's maybe the, you know, maybe it should be, maybe the women should be racing over two laps and the men over one. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, there's no reason why they should be the same necessarily, but there was a big discrepancy there with the men racing over two laps and the women just one, and it seemed a bit odd.
I think the getting up at 7 o'clock in the morning argument is probably not going to fly with a lot of people. That in that case, the schedule needs to look. I mean, we've got some weird scheduling anyway this week. There's the under 23 men's road race is due to finish at 7:05 on Friday, which is basically sunset. I mean, we're talking here now at 6:25, and it's pretty gloomy out there, and if we have wet weather and dark skies, they could be racing the final lap in practically the dark.
Yeah, the reason for that late finish is because the starts of the women's junior and men's under 23 races are in Doncaster, and that's basically an hour and 10 minutes away from where we are right now in Harrogate. So basically when we finish the junior women's race, the whole organization has to rush back to Doncaster. It's an hour and 10 minutes. But I was told that they might get rid of a lap for the under 23 men's race.
That'd be good, Seb, because it would mean you could join us on time for our event at the Royal Hall, for which there are still tickets available, aren't there, Lionel?
There are.
Cyclingpodcast.com, live events, click on the tab and come and join over 500 people at the Royal Hall on Friday. It should be great fun.
Yeah, we've got Matt White coming, haven't we? Mitchelton Scott sports director,
and
who
famous former Doncaster waiter Francois Tomazo.
Of course, yes. Reprising our lineup from the Arts Theatre a couple of years ago, where Matt White brought the house down with his famously indiscreet anecdotes. So we're hoping for more of the same, aren't we?
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, Cycling Podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
Well, that's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour at the Tour de France, interrupting our episode.
That's so strange.
I know, very strange. But to remind us on this occasion, to tell you that this episode is sponsored by Lacca. Lacca is a specialist bicycle insurance company with a difference. Your premiums are based on the claims made by members of the community each month. So if there are no claims, there's no premium. Lacca says their members have saved, on average, 61% insuring their bikes and equipment with them. And premiums are also capped, so there can't be any unwelcome surprises. Lacca cover your bikes and equipment from theft, damage, travel abroad, and also they'll cover you in races and sportives as long as you're not a professional rider. And because Lacca serves a community of cyclists, they know what they're covering and how to replace your bikes and gear when something goes wrong. So let's hear from Jens Hartvig, one of the founders of Lacca, who can tell us what happens when a Lacca customer has to make a claim and how they can get you back on the road quickly.
So the moment you sign in into our website and basically just submit the claim, upload a video of yourself quickly telling us what happened, telling us where and when. From our side, we are then just really looking, okay, what happened to the bike? Are there any deadlines for you? Are you having a holiday coming up where we really need the bike for? And then we're really looking at, like, what is the best solution for you as a member of the community, and what's the best outcome for the community overall? Because we are basically the middleman, so to speak, to get the best outcome for everyone. Classic example, you crashed on a race, your right shifter and your right rear mech is broken. Now you want to get those replaced. We would usually work with a local shop to get you these parts, get them fitted as fast as possible. On average, that's usually around less than 7 days, and you're back on the road.
So if you'd like to join Lacca's community and save on your insurance, go to lacca.co.uk. That's lacca.co.uk, spelled lacca.co.uk.
So the other story today regarding the racing was the men's junior time trial, Antonio Tiberi of Italy. I mean, really incredible. He, first of all, before he set the fastest time and held on to win, he got a lot of praise for his cool and calm response to a problem that he had as he rolled down the start ramp, and he couldn't pedal. There was something wrong with his bike. I'm not entirely sure what was wrong with his bike, but he needed to change bikes. That happened quite slowly because, you know, his team weren't ready for that. He did appear to be very calm, and then he got on with it. He had other problems as well on the course. He got a car got in his way at one point. He had to squeeze past that as he was catching riders. It was a bit of a shambles at times, but he was very impressive, and he won the race after a terrible start.
The young Nibali, as the Italians apparently call him. I spoke to a few colleagues about Antonio Tiberi, who carries the name of a former mayor of Paris, you might remember. What a day. Unbelievable to see a rider have a mechanical issue as soon as 100 meters. And he remained calm and composed. And maybe, I'm not going to say that's what made the difference, but he took the first lap maybe in a rather easy way and then gave it all he had on the second lap, whereas others like Simmons the American or his compatriot, the great favorite of the event, Andrea Piccolo, looked rather impressive on the first lap and then lost time and precious time on the second lap to eventually finish fourth, fifth or sixth. But a hell of a performance from the young man.
Do you know why they call him the young Nibali? Is he from Sicily or is it just more his personality?
I have no idea.
Because...
but he's built... He's not built as a tall, strong time trialist. He's rather slim. Looks pretty good on a bike.
Nibali has that calmness as well, doesn't he? I suppose. You could imagine him perhaps being equally unflustered under that sort of pressure.
Too young to tell. But what was also interesting, it's always interesting when you follow the junior events, men or women, is to look at the names on the list of starters, and you'll always see year after year the sons of. I think I remember a few years ago it was Van Hooydonk. This year we had quite a few. We had obviously Eleanor Bergstedt, daughter of the Paris-Roubaix winner. But in the men's race there was Nicholas Vinokourov, one of the twins of Alexander Vinokourov, and one of the last. To start today was Lars Boven, the Dutch rider, son of Jan Boven.
Who's a DS now at Jumbo-Visma. He had to stop for a pee during the Giro.
He did indeed, famously. Yeah. There's also Christians Belovosics, the son of the Latvian of the same surname, obviously. What punditry this is.
And tomorrow we've got...
teasing myself.
Tomorrow we've got Konishev, Dmitry Konishev's son. What's his first name again? Dmitry Konishev's son... he's now DS at, is he Dimitri as well?
Junior.
Well, he is running for Italy, where his father has lived for many years, and he's a DS at Katusha Alpecin. Spoke to Dmitry Konishev about his son, actually, at the Giro for an episode of Kilometer Zero, I think it was. He was into football originally. He was quite a good footballer. He got into cycling more recently, and Konishev was not in favour of him becoming a cyclist initially.
It's rather interesting to see that Konishev has decided to ride for Italy, his father's Russian, while Sivakov has decided to ride for Russia, his mum is French. Why isn't he not on the French national side?
And he was born in Italy and brought up in France, but I thought his mother was Russian.
Yeah, I think they're both Russian, but lived in France so long that would be eligible for France. But
he's pulled out of the time trial, actually, concentrating on the road race, Sivakov. But speaking of famous sons and daughters, I spoke briefly, or got a reaction from Eleanor Bergstedt at the finish, and you spoke to her father, Magnus. She's actually the daughter of cycling parents, isn't she?
Eleanor's parents are Magnus Bergstedt, the 2004 Paris-Roubaix winner, of course, and Megan Hughes, who raced internationally for Wales. Bergstedt, of course, is Swedish, and Eleanor is racing for Great Britain. And I wanted to ask Magnus, you know, how that made him feel.
It feels incredible, really, like to get a bronze medal at a home championships. That's just pretty incredible with all the crowds and, yeah, everyone cheering me on, like being the last person off. That was pretty scary, but the crowds kept me going all the way around, so that was really nice. And yeah, I'm really happy. In like course wrecking stuff, the roads have been dry, so as you probably saw, I nearly fell off. But in recce, that corner had been dry and I was able to take it in the skis, but when I got there, it was just a bit wet and a bit slippy, and I just braked a bit too late when I came out of the skis, and that caused me my back wheel to slide. But yeah, it was pretty difficult with like a change of weather and change of surface, but I think apart from that little mishap, I coped with it. I don't think it cost me 10 seconds, but you never know, really. It could have... I don't think I could definitely say that it did or it didn't, really. What happens, happens, I guess.
What do you think of the circuit, generally? I mean, it's quite challenging, isn't it? What do you like it? What do you think of it?
I don't love it, but I don't hate it, to be honest. Like, it's different to what I would normally ride. Like, you never really get courses like that, ever, I don't think. So I'm used to just doing time trials down dual carriageways in a straight line, so I didn't really get much technical stuff apart from Nations Cups. And yeah, it was really good, actually. I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would, and there's strengths and weaknesses for everyone on that course, I think, so it's quite an equal course. This year, obviously, I've learned like a lot, and I just plan to improve in the future and find myself in the field and improve and learn and help my ability grow.
Is it kind of weird that obviously you were born and brought up in Sweden, you're a Swede, you know, honorary Brit, really, and your daughter's competing for Great Britain?
Good question, that. I think I'm probably more British these days than I am Swedish, but I guess if you peel back the layers, it's still blue and yellow on the inside, I guess. Now I cheer for her because she's whatever country it was for or whatever, it's just, I think she's riding her bike in a way that I really enjoy watching, and it's more about just being dad, being supporting your child, doing what they have ever always dreamt of doing.
It's been quite an eventful day for you with Eleanor getting a bronze medal in the time trial this morning.
Definitely the most nervous I've ever been, I think, this morning. It was to the point where I felt sick before she started. So it's been, I think, quite a difficult run into these championships for her, to deal with the pressure and learning to deal with the pressure as well, to perform at this level when the whole of the country is watching you. I'm just happy that she got to do a proper ride and her legs worked the way they should, and you know, the result at the end of the day, I think is, you know, it's always nice when they get a medal, obviously, but at the same time it's irrelevant as long as she got to perform at her best level, and I think she did that today.
Was Eleanor happy with how it went? Obviously to get to stand on the podium and get a medal is fantastic, but was she pretty happy, or was there a slight disappointment that it wasn't another step or two higher?
Knowing her, she would have been disappointed that it wasn't the rainbow jersey, but at the same time, like we were talking beforehand, I said, look, if you can come back into another major championship and pull off another, even a top five, that will be a phenomenal ride and you know, really good result. If you get a medal, then you can't expect any more than that, really, to be perfectly honest. And the fact that this course wasn't exactly tailor-made for her, if we pulled her out on this sort of wide-open country roads with a bit of crosswind and all the rest of it, and then it would have been a course that was sort of made for her. So the fact that she's medaled twice now as a junior on two different, completely different courses, I think it just bodes well for the future for her.
What's it like being the parent of an athlete taking part in the World Championships? Obviously, Eleanor's mum also has international experience, so you've got a lot of experience in it that you can draw on to pass on, but how much do you have to kind of remain a parent rather than a coach?
She's with the GB cycling team. They look after her and deal with all of the coaching aspects of her riding. I try and be dad as much as I possibly can and not be too involved in it, but obviously I'm there to answer any questions that she has, and if there are any special bits and pieces, then she usually tends to come and ask me for my opinion as well. And at the end of the day, she needs to learn to make these choices, do her thing, ride a bike the way she rides a bike, not the way I rode it or her mum rides it or her sister rides it. So it's all about just finding her way of being Eleanor on the bike. She's doing that, and she's done that over the last 2 years now, where she's grown in and had to deal with expectations, had to find her niche, her way of where she's good, where she's not so good, and what she can improve on, and so on. Now we're getting towards that point that she always has been dreaming of reaching a world level as a bike racer. So I guess the next couple of years now is going to be interesting to see where where she ends up and how things goes, because now the real world is beckoning him. But you know, apart from Friday, that's the last junior bike race she ever does. So yeah, into the real world.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you to Science and Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. You can get 25% off at scienceandsport.com with code SISCP25. And, well, I hope you've got some Science and Sport products for Thursday, Lionel, because you'll probably be needing it for the World Championships.
The World Championships, yes. What are we doing? We're doing a 74-kilometre bike ride with people who've bought tickets to come along. The ride is all going to be guided by, a friend of yours, Richard, who runs a cycling touring company that does this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then there's some
food. La Corsa, Andy Mackie, and James McCallum, who used to ride for Rafa Condor,
Scotland.
NFTO, and Scotland. They won a Commonwealth Games medal a few years ago.
Then there's some food, and then Richard and I, Daniel and Francois, will be, we'll be recording a kind of live podcast, won't we? A bit of a World Championship preview and answering some questions from the audience. But I'm plugging this as if we're still selling tickets.
He won a Commonwealth Games medal that I subsequently broke at a dinner, but got fixed, so all ended well. But it wasn't. He wasn't that happy for a while. Anyway, we've moved on from that. So what are we looking forward to tomorrow then, chaps?
Well, the men's under 23 time trial in the morning and the elite women's time trial in the afternoon.
The under 23 is interesting because you do get some riders there who have already kind of made a splash. Mark Hershey, the Sunweb rider, who's been in really good form recently, is one of the riders riding. So, you know, Evenepoel isn't. He's not riding. He's riding the senior on Wednesday, isn't he?
But he's riding the road race
and the
on
road race.
Sunday. And I believe that you can't ride the under 23 time trial and then the senior road race, can you?
Probably not. You? I think you have to probably opt for one category or another, don't you?
I would have thought so. But I don't know for sure without looking at the rule book. But
I don't know exactly what the rule is. But I thought also one of the rules was as when you're part of a World Tour team, a professional World Tour team, you're not allowed to ride for under 23s, but I see that Mark Hirschi is starting the under 23 race. So,
was that a rule that
was
changed?
Yeah, it's changed in recent years.
Yeah, because that's been an issue the last couple of years. We have seen riders in the under 23 road race, you know, up there who've been riding for World Tour teams as well. Don't know. We'll talk about that at some point. Yeah. I mean, we're still talking about the mixed relay a little bit, aren't we? And the revelation that there was, you know, about 70% of the total prize money for the week went into the mixed relay team time trial. It was €58,000 for the winning team.
Yep.
€7,000 if you win the men's or the women's road races at the weekend. So quite interesting. The UCI clearly very keen that teams enter the team time trial.
Well, this is an extreme version of nudge theory, isn't it? To get people on the start line, perhaps. Richard, well, when we talked about it over our lunch here earlier, you were pretty scathing about the idea that the governing body, in its guise as a race organiser, is able to or willing to offer such a financial incentive compared to the prize on offer for the elite races. And I can see your point. But on the other hand, maybe it took some money to ensure that there would be a decent enough field to go ahead with the event. I can't really make up my mind
what
I think about
that. Well, I think race organisers can do what they want and offer whatever prize money they want. But there's a bit of a conflict because UCI are race organisers here and also the custodians of the sport, and they set the rules for the sport, and so they can be very influential in all sorts of good and bad ways. And I think, you know, if we were, why not let the event sort of grow organically and either work or not work and stand or fall by its merits rather than try to influence, you know, who rides and how many teams take part by the prize money. It just seems a bit, I don't know, it just seems a bit strange.
I think they maybe want to really attract the most nations and the biggest riders as possible, because I do believe that they have a goal for the future, and the goal is to make it a major event at the Worlds, and why not to have it at the Olympics?
But is it right that if you were a member of that six person team, and the prize money was split equally. You would walk away with €9,666, whereas the winner of the men's and the women's road race the weekend will get €7,500.
Well, I mean, yeah, but you know, the winner of the, particularly the men's road race at the weekend, will over time bank a lot more money than the prize money. I mean, the prize money really is irrelevant anyway.
Yes, that is true.
I think it does highlight the struggle that the UCI has in its role as a race organizer of this week. It's expensive for the cities to bid to host, and you know, you've got a situation where it kind of exposes the fact that cycling is not a sport where prize money is the sort of the golden carrot. It's not like
this
tennis or golf or other sports where the money is absolutely beyond people's wildest dreams. The money is almost it's just a sort of a trinket on top of the salaries that they already earn, which in the men's case is fine, but in, you know, perhaps certainly in the women's field, it's probably not fine. Would there be the same criticism if the UCI did try to balance the overall playing field by elevating the women's prize money pot against the men's prize money?
These are all sorts of arguments, Lionel, for another day. We should probably leave it. I mean, we were wondering last night why, or not wondering, but we were sort of celebrating the fact that the Dutch team seemed so overjoyed at winning the first ever mixed relay team time trial. Now we know they are each of them €10,000 better off.
Well, your little nugget of information from earlier about the fact that in the hotel that
the same British cycling official I bumped into said that he's sharing a hotel with the Dutch team and the American team, and he said it was very interesting to watch the differences between the two. The American men eat on one table and the American women eat on another table, and the Dutch team all mix. They all kind of, the men and the women all eat together and seem a very integrated team, and I think that is true. I don't know if that partly explains why Dutch female cyclists are so successful, but the sport there, the female sport, has a very high profile, and Orla, who lives there, says that, you know, regularly on the evening sort of sports show, Annemiek van Vleuten's there as a guest.
Yeah, it's interesting what you were talking about the Americans and the Dutch. I had breakfast this morning with Team Kuwait in my tiny little modest hotel, and the Kuwaitis men and women were together. That's rather nice to see, and joking a lot.
And Seb Piquet, they had Seb Piquet as well. You did breakfast with them at their table. You joined them.
I sometimes have breakfast when I have time.
Right, well, we should leave things, eh?
You certainly should.
That's a bit. We had something else to do tonight. I remembered what it was. Connor Dunn's Tour of Britain Diaries, just been released for Friends of the Podcast. Two parts. It's fantastic. It's really entertaining.
Very entertaining.
It really is.
If you want to, well, you don't get an answer to why British chicken and pasta are so white. But
why Chainsaw Ben is called Chainsaw Ben, and lots of other mysteries. But it's a very entertaining listen, so thanks for that, Connor. And if you want to listen to it, sign up as a friend of the podcast if you haven't already done so at thecyclingpodcast.com. We should thank a few friends of the podcast, shouldn't we, Lionel? We'll reinstate that tomorrow night. Thanks anyway to all of you. And thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Seb.
À très bientôt.